Blog Talk Radio.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. Your song, it will get better.
It's gotta get
better. It will get better.
It's gonna be
better. It will get better.
Cause God,
God is in
control,
control.
Hey. Thank you, Lord. Hey.
Find the praise
within your heart.
Ellen Jacobs, let's give her a hand as she comes to the mic at this time.
Oh,
Thank you. It's so beautiful to be with you this afternoon. And it's a threatening afternoon here in New York City. I don't know wherever you are. It looks as though it's going to rain and rain hard, and the forecasters are saying that it will. But anyhow, here we are, and glad to be here. And as we usually do, I'm going to start our afternoon with a psalm, and this is Psalm 19. In the Bible that I use, King James Version, there's a title here, The Works and Words of God. Psalm 19. The heavens declare the glory of God, and the firmament shows his handiwork. Day unto day utters speech, and night unto night reveals knowledge. There is no speech nor language where their voice is not heard. Their line has gone out through all the earth, and their words to the end of the world. In them he has set a tabernacle for the sun, which is like a bridegroom coming out of his chamber, and rejoices like a strong man to run its race. Its rising is from one end of heaven, and its circuit to the other end, and there is nothing hidden from its heat. The law of the Lord is perfect, converting the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The statutes of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgment of the Lord are true and righteous altogether. More to be desired are they than gold, yea, than much fine gold. Sweeter also than honey and the honeycomb. Moreover, by them your servant is warned, and in keeping them there is great reward. Who can understand his errors? Cleanse me from secret faults. Keep back your servant also from presumptuous sins. Let them not have dominion over me. Then I shall be blameless, and I shall be innocent of great transgression. Let the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. And we know the Lord will add a blessing to the reading of his magnificent and wonderful words in Psalm 19. It's a beautiful psalm, isn't it? It is just lovely. Yes, thank you, God. Thank you, God. Thank you, God. And so now we move on to a continued study of the book of Hosea, the prophet to the Israelites. And last week we ended with a discussion on the nature of the adultery of the Israelites and how it applies to us and what we can do about it. And we're going to continue that this week, and we'll have a moment so we can talk about some of the ideas that are put forth. Okay, just by way of review, when Hosea began his ministry, Israel was enjoying a temporary period of political and economic prosperity under the king Jeroboam II. However, the nation began to crumble, but Assyria strengthened it. The reigns of Israel's last six kings were relatively brief, since four of them were murdered and a fifth was carried captive to Assyria. Confusion and decline characterized the last years of the Northern Kingdom, and her people refused to heed Hosea's warning of imminent judgment. The people were in a spiritual stupor, riddled with sin and idolatry. And we know that Hosea chapters 1 through 3 tell us of Gomer and Hosea's of Gomer and Hosea, the adulterous wife and the faithful husband. And chapters 4 through 14 tell us of the adulterous Israel and the faithful Lord. So that this idea of adultery is carried out, adultery and its forgiveness is carried out in chapters 1 to 3 with Gomer and Hosea's relationship, and from 4 to 14, I should say, about God's faithfulness to an adulterous Israel. Now, this is more or less the, that's the literal of this, but there are so many beautiful ideas here that we need to go through. And one of the things that I did not do previously was to talk about the meaning of the names of Gomer, Gomer in particular. We did Hosea, of course. Of course, we know that Hosea does represent salvation and the I Am. And Gomer, a prostitute, wife of Hosea, at the command of Jehovah. Jehovah told him he must marry Gomer. And her it's said in the text that her father's name is Diblaim, Hebrew, and its meaning, double cakes, twin cakes. Now, the metaphysical meaning, I'm going to bring this up because this is Gomer's father, Diblaim. I'm going to bring it up because it brought, when I read his what the name means metaphysically, it brings us to a discussion that we didn't have last week, and it's a pivotal discussion as we go through this. Diblaim means double-mindedness. That is trying to serve and love both God and mammon, or worldliness. And this is the great adultery or whoredom of professed followers of God. Diblaim, double cakes or twin cakes, signifies the double-minded thoughts in regards to substance and life. It is the belief that certain phases of life are spiritual and other phases are material. And now, man must become established in the truth of the one substance, the one life, in order to become pure in mind and body and to serve God wholly and perfectly, to have this single eye, or an eye single to God and truth. Now, we are on this path of regeneration, and most certainly that is what we are about, to merge the spiritual and the material so that we are single-minded, not double-minded. And I think this is particularly important for us because we are sworn, committed servants of God. But we do have aspects of us that make us double-minded. And so we're going to be looking today at some of those items that make us double-minded. And so when I read this about Gomer's father, I had to share that with you, because I think it's a very important piece, that the adultery that we're talking about in Isaiah refers to thought in regards to substance and life. Us, we who are New Thought Christians especially, we profess in our mind treatments, affirmative prayer, there is one mind, there is one substance. God is all. We are always reiterating this oneness. However, we also have to look at ourselves and see if our mental, spiritual, physical, those aspects of us are one. And if they are not, then we too are double-minded. So this takes us into a look within ourselves, very personal, very private, and we need to work with that if this is true of us. Later on in the program, Reverend Mary Lou is going to be talking to us about in chapter 7. I think it's chapter 7. About double-mindedness, and it has to do with our secret habits that we have that others may not know about, our addictive behaviors, our shopaholicness, our amassing of all kinds of things and ideas, etc. So it'll take us into insight into our own lives, those things which we need to look into. So I just thought that this idea of double-mindedness is so important. And another thing is, another aspect of Hosea that I did not mention too, is Gomer. As we know, Gomer is a prostitute, the wife of Hosea that was commanded by Jehovah. In chapter 3, he does reconcile with her and buy her out of slavery and brings her into his life again, and she becomes, I guess they live happily ever after. But this is a very important piece. Well, what is Gomer anyway? What does her name signify? Her name signifies organic accumulation, organized aggregation, full, complete, finished, perfected, ended. And that's an unusual name for a prostitute. However, metaphysically, it indicates this. Human reason in its greatest perfection and completion, Goma, fails to reach spiritual wisdom and truth. There is no real building, preserving quality in human reason. It is always destructive in the end. So human reason is an enemy to pure spiritual understanding. It is adulterous in that it looks to the outer and depends upon man-devised resources, even while proclaiming its perfect trust in God. And so if we feel that our trust in God is perfect, we really have to examine that and see, is there any, if it is in any way at odds with human, with pure spiritual understanding, because that is what we are aiming for. We are aiming for pure spiritual understanding. And so we must look within to see if there is anything that is out of alignment with the pure, wonderful, magnificent understanding of God's law and truth. And so I want to just there are a few more items in chapter 6 that I just want to hit on very quickly. It is as follows. As we know, Hosea represents spiritual I am, calling us to observe divine law. As a matter of fact, that's what the law, that's what Hosea is about, that we are called upon to observe divine law. And so I said, well, why don't we observe divine law? And, of course, it's lack of knowledge of divine law, mental laziness, and pursuit of physical luxury. We live in a world where there are so many things that are physically available and so many things that attract us, so many things that we go for, so many things we give our energy to. So how do we on the path of regeneration, how do we cast out mental laziness and love for physical luxury? By returning to Jehovah as admonished by Hosea. And he writes, come, he speaks, come, and let us return unto Jehovah, for he hath torn, and he will heal us. He has smitten, and he will bind us up. So true return, then, as we know, is a change of mind in which we are centered on God and spiritual man, not on self in the natural man. And so it's about our centering, giving all of as much of our attention as possible, the majority, most of our attention to God. And so that is to return to God. It is a mental thing. It is a spiritual thing. It is an emotional thing. And so that is what we must do. Our path of regeneration helps us with that. But I think when we look into our heart of hearts and we look into our minds and our actions, we may see that that's not 100% true. And so where we see we're lacking, we need to change our minds and center us, our everything on God. Well, the text says that Jehovah brings good and evil upon his people. We, as New Thought Christians, we do not believe that God has anything to do with evil. So how do we reconcile this revengeful Jehovah of the Old Testament with the loving Father of the New? This is an important question because so many of us have come from other places where we believed in hell, we believed in God's ready to punish us for the things we did wrong, whether it is now in this life or whether it will be in hell. And so this is an important question for us as New Thought Christians. The prophets and the seers who wrote the Old Testament had not developed love, and they thought that God was like themselves, both good and evil. The question comes up, well, from what do good and evil arise? And they arise from the use of the I am power. Good and evil are effects. Good and evil are effects. Good and evil are effects. The source of all, Jehovah, on the universal level and the I am in the individual, is neither good nor evil. By using I am power in the wrong way, man can bring about inharmony, disharmony, which he calls evil. Or by using I am power in the right way, he can bring harmony, which he calls good. And I think this is a very powerful concept because we realize that we are in charge of what comes into our lives when we are using the I, and we always use that I am power. When we use it negatively, we reap negativity. When we use it positively, we reap goodness. And so it is on us. Good and evil are effects, not causes. So when we have the perfect concept of divine mind, shall we have two standards, or will those standards of good and evil disappear? In pure spiritual consciousness, we shall have the concept of perfection. In our Adam and Eve consciousness, which we have, We believe in good and evil. However, Jesus, our way shower, Jesus, our example, Jesus whom we follow, Jesus who we align with, said, ye judge after the flesh. I judge no man. And he said too, if any man hear my sayings and keep them not, I judge him not. For I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. So I think this is one of the most interesting concepts I have experienced, and it talks to us about not judging. Jesus does not judge us. I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. And so and it says, ye judge after the flesh. I judge no man. And if any man hear my sayings and keep them not, I judge him not. For I came not to judge the world, but to save the world. So God sent forth his son into the world. He did not send forth his son into the world to condemn the world, but that the world through him might be saved. And so therefore, we may come into a realization of the principle of perfection within us is here, and it depends on whether we judge or censure other people, ourselves or other people. And when we have realized the truth that the Lord desires the spiritual goodness that's already in us rather than sacrifice, and right understanding of him and his law rather than gifts and offerings. So we are admonished by Jesus not to judge ourselves or others. That is a very powerful piece. And if we do judge a righteous judgment, see the good in the person, place, or thing, and not the negative. And that is a very important piece. I don't know about you, but that is very hard for me. And so I got another something else that I must do. And so what do we do if we don't judge then? We use love. We shower everything and everyone with love. That is what we did, just as Jesus did. Jesus loved us and loved all mankind. And so, therefore, we are called upon to do that. So what distinguishes a follower of God, a knower of God, from those who conform to man-made uses and customs? The inner spiritual qualities of goodness and knowledge are evident, and we know that goodness especially is demonstrated by love, unconditional love in all we think, say, and do. That is for ourselves and others. And so we are admonished here not to to judge, but to love. Very heavy challenge for me. I don't know about you, but it's a very heavy challenge. And so then double-mindedness as a concept means we need to look within ourselves and see if we are double-minded. And judgment is something that we need to look at very carefully in ourselves and build on and build up the love. In Hosea, at the beginning, when Gomer is sold into slavery, Hosea redeems her. He buys her and reinstates her as his wife and his companion, and we assume they lived happily ever after. That is what we are called upon to do. We are called upon to allow the spiritual part of us, that which indwells us, that which is of God in us, to not punish, but to join with all of that which is us. And so that we all be, that love surrounds every part of us, that love, we align every single part of us with love and not with judgment. It's a tall order, but we can't do it because, and we're given the assurance that whatever we do, whatever is pleasing and important for us spiritually, God will give it to us. He will give us the gifts that we, the things that we ask for. And so when we exercise these things, we will receive, we'll receive. All right, so then I want to move on with Reverend Mary Lou, who is going to speak to us about Chapter 7. I want to say this, that if anybody does not have their mute on, if you're not speaking, will you put your phone on mute, please? Thank you. All right, Reverend Mary Lou, go right ahead.
Oh, thank you, Reverend Ellen. So, as we move on from Chapter 6, from Hosea.
Okay, excuse me just a minute, Mary Lou. Yeah, I want to speak again. If someone has moved away from their phone and they don't realize it's on mute, would you check to see that your phone is on mute? Thank you. Okay, dear, go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you. Yes, in Chapter 6, there's the reconciliation between the sense consciousness, which is Gomer, and the Christ consciousness, which is Hosea. And as we move on to Chapter 7, there's a deeper meaning of this reconciliation between the Christ consciousness, Hosea, and the sense consciousness, Gomer. So in Chapter 7, it portrays the Israelites in a spiritual decline. And all the while the Israelites are in this spiritual decline, the Lord hopes for the Israelites to be restored to a harmonious relationship with God and with nature. In Chapter 7, Hosea is also known for the metaphors used, such as about nature, such as in verse 11, when he says, Israel flits around like a silly pigeon. First her people call on Egypt for help, and then they run to Assyria. And then in verse 16, They keep on turning away from me to the God that is powerless. They are as unreliable as a crooked bow. Now, because their leaders talk arrogantly, they will die a violent death, and then the Egyptians will laugh. So now from the Truth Unity website, the metaphysical commentary about Chapter 7 talks about temperance, and the subject of temperance cannot be comprehended in the mere absence from strong drink. This is the usual meaning and use of the term temperance. However, and nearly all those who make this reform their specialty confine their efforts to methods that will remove the temptation and control the appetite. Now, these methods are usually the exercise of willpower and the recourse to external laws. Now, intemperance has a cause lying deeper than physical appetite. The soul is yearning for something, and this outer craving indicates an inward lack. So long as there is a dearth of soul satisfaction, the physical craving will continue. All reforms that do not go into the subjective side of the question are only temporary. Many a person has been healed by mentally saying, my soul is satisfied with the love of God. My soul is satisfied with the love of God. Okay? So the soul that has no knowledge of these inner resources of life is like one who has great treasures in vaults and has forgotten about it. When the person's mind is refreshed by one who is familiar with the divine law, the person begins to look for this supply of the divine law and finds it within the person. Then the person is living according to the law of being human, the divine law of being human. And the vague cravings that led to this outer sources of satisfaction is done away with, is gone. So the intemperance of appetite in many of its phases is healed through this simple recognition of the law, the divine law. Intemperate eating, for example, is accompanied by a craving for stimulants. Excessive meat eating and heavy drinking go hand in hand. But the word of the Spirit opens the thought to the living substance at the very heart of the soul. And the person forever loses that gross desire built up by trying to get satisfaction from matter and material things. A strong desire in the consciousness for a fuller realization of life leads most people to stimulants. The remedy is to substitute the real stimulant for the false stimulant. So long as man wants, he will seek the satisfaction of that want in one way or another. If whiskey is taken away from the drunkard and nothing given him in its place, he will continue to crave it. If he be given a substitute, he will transfer his desire to the substitute. For instance, morphine or cocaine. Or food or shopping. But if he be given the real life element, which is the more abundant life mentioned by Jesus, he will find his desire in possession of its own, and both he and his friends will see that it was not evil, but satisfaction he was seeking. Now, the first step, then, in healing the drunkard in ourselves or another is to withdraw all condemnation and censure, to withdraw any judgment, to be non-judgmental. That's the first thing. And then affirm the law of love. There is a very close connection between love and life. When we love and pour out this subtle essence of our soul, which stirs the heart center till it glows like a furnace, we are moving to action the life energies of being, and a great law of mind equilibrium is fulfilled. He that loves another has fulfilled the law. A man once testified that he healed himself of drunkenness by saying, whenever the desire for liquor came upon him, I do not love whiskey, I love God. I do not love whiskey, I love God. Here was a practical application of the law of love to the healing of desire. The sense man is constantly reaching out for a more abundant thing of existence. The spirit within us is constantly saying, let the children of Israel go forward. We drink the bitter waters and are bitten by the serpents of sense consciousness. Whenever we try to satisfy through the flesh these inner cravings, soul desire is satisfied only with the higher things. Our desires are from God and must be fulfilled in God-like ways. Now this sense man must be lifted up as Moses lifted up the serpent in the wilderness. Now the minds of those whose bodies are saturated with the lust for tea, for coffee, tobacco, and liquor are spiritually in the darkness. They are asleep in sense thought, sense consciousness, which is similar to a state of coma. Those who are in the light consciousness can help those to dissipate this darkness dark spirit by casting off the works of the dark spirit. Now deny for them that they are mentally bound to these various thoughts that make up the drunkard's world. Say with the conviction of authority, awake, thou that sleepest, and Christ shall give thee light. Christ shall give thee spiritual connections. Put on the Lord Jesus Christ and make no provision for the flesh to fulfill the lust thereof. These lusts of the flesh are many, and they help one another. For instance, it is found by actual experiment that abstaining from meat lessens the appetite for liquor. It is said that there never was a vegetarian drunkard. Meat sets up a fever in the stomach that calls for something to cool it, and we drink more than the system needs. There are tea and coffee addicts, I would say, and their need of healing is fully as great as the whiskey drunkards. The word of spiritual satisfaction will also heal these addictions. So thank you. That was...
Okay. Thank you very much, Reverend Mary Lou. I think that we see a connection I'm seeing the connection between double-mindedness in that we are spiritual and we have sense consciousness, and very often that sense consciousness is so operative in us that it tempts us, it takes us into places that are unspiritual, and we just like alcoholism, it causes us to take the energy from the center that should be God and spiritual things and growth and upbuilding stuff, and takes us into places that we don't need to be. Our energy does not need to be. And so there is a connection then between, as we were talking about, but we become double-minded, giving so much attention to those things that should not be a center of our lives. And I just wanted to, we talked about, Fillmore uses alcoholism as a an example, but I just wanted to call out the others. Overeating, of course, you mentioned that. Being a shopaholic, a hoarder, a drug user, being interested tremendously in pornography or sex or gambling. And I'm sure that there are other things that I did not mention, certainly, that you know about. But for each one of us, if there is some kind of stimulation that we are looking for in life that is not positive, then we see that we can get rid of that. And it's not about condemning ourselves or others. It's about love. I love these affirmations that you gave. My soul is satisfied with the love of God. And the love of God is the real stimulant. I don't love whiskey. I love God. We can substitute anything we want in there for whiskey and use that affirmation, and that certainly is a beautiful affirmation. And Christ is my spiritual connection. Lovely, lovely, lovely. So I just wanted to say thank you very much for that. And I know that you can see that the double-mindedness of the Israelites and the double-mindedness of us as human beings and us as New Thought Christians certainly is important. So we know that we can be delivered from double-mindedness if we observe it. We know that Jesus admonishes us, judge not ourselves or others. We know that through Jesus, love is the fulfillment of the law, and our heart center should be open and alive, and love should pour out of this love center of ours and these love feelings of ours, and not judgment. We know that our physical cravings and desires indicate, if they become cravings, they indicate an inner lack. What is this lack? What do we lack? So by looking within and examining our inner lacks, we know that we can get over them, that we certainly will be able to let them go. Real life is about a more abundant life. We want a more abundant life. And Jesus has offered us this more abundant life. And Jesus came to give us this abundant life. And that abundant life is what we are most in need of and why we are on this path of regeneration in the first place, because we are going through the regenerative process so that we can enjoy life in the flesh, not about heaven. It's not about the future. It's about enjoying the life that God has breathed into our nostrils, and through the knowledge of the law, we can actually experience its fulfillment right where we are. All right, and so let it be, let it be, let it be. So I hope that what we've spoken about today will be important, because it brings up a few things that we may not have thought about. Anyway, not in the way. And one of the things that studying the Bible does for us is it reviews stuff that we know, and maybe it points at something that we need to look into personally. And so it does. It does. It does. It does. It does. Okay, so if there's any comment, we have about 5-10 minutes left because we started late. So we will be able to have a discussion about what we did today. Or something else that's on your mind, maybe what we need to do. And so go right ahead.
Well, I just wanted to add something that was interesting. What a wonderful story. This is human. This is a very human story. It's relevant. And I'll tell you about abundance. It's interesting. And this is a bizarre case because it doesn't happen to everyone. But I knew a man. I didn't know him personally, but I knew of a man who had everything you could ever need in life, or want in life, all of the luxuries. He never had to work because he inherited every month. He would get big sums of money, and he lived. He had ranches in Arizona. He had a home in Wisconsin. He had everything, and he married a beautiful woman, and he was living the life of luxury, all of the possessions you ever wanted in life. And many people would more than likely envy a person like that. He had an abundance of everything, never needed anything, had so much money, didn't know what to do with it. And I don't know what happened. But I guess this was supposed to happen. We're talking about consequences. And I don't remember anything about his spiritual life, because I understand he was a little mentally ill. But he enjoyed all of these luxuries. And the long story short, because we're on the minute, is that somehow he lost it. His wife must have felt something, and she left him. The man committed suicide. Does he have a chance to overcome this? Will he come back and with more knowledge and more understanding of who God is? So I just use that as a bizarre example, because it happens to many of us, because we go after, in the human experience, we go after things, that's more important. And we sacrifice everything to get those things, and we worship those things because that's more important than going to church or praying. You don't have time because you're too busy making money and doing all of those wonderful things that life has to offer. So I'll just stop there, but I just wanted to mention that this story reminded me of that particular situation.
Well, I guess it is a situation that many of us, to a greater or lesser degree, maybe a much lesser degree than this man, finds so engrossing in life. And even for us who are committed to serving God and fellow man, very often in our lives we have things to which we give so much of our energy. So much of our can become the center of our lives, and so we have to look at our lives and see if there is something in your life that you give so much attention to that may or may not be positive. Usually these things are not positive. As I said, Fillmore uses the example of alcoholism. We know that alcoholism is not positive, but we also have several things that are not glaring like alcoholism or drug addiction. But we have things in our private life to which we give much of the energy that we should be giving to God's service and God's knowledge, and so those are the things that we are looking at. And we were talking about double-mindedness. We may not be actually suffering because of it. Not like we suffer when we are addicted to drugs or alcohol. I know that there are a lot of people who are addicted to pornography. And they it's a very, I guess it doesn't really show itself in any kind of deviance. It doesn't show itself in any physical, symptoms and stuff. But it's something we should look into. The same with hoarding. There are many people who actually hoard and live in squalor. You may not know it because they may look good when they come out in the street, but you can't go in their homes. So I'm just saying there are hidden things that we need to look at in our own lives and see if they're there. If they're not, thank God. If they are, then God is not going to punish you because of it. You are not being punished for something that you did. It's up to you. And I love these affirmations, especially the one where the man said, I do not love whiskey, I love God. He was able to actually cure his alcoholism by affirmation and by actually entering into loving God. And the same with, it's my soul is satisfied with the love of God. Knowing that these things that we become addicted to or make us, that we should not be giving all our energies to this, that's because of we are not embracing and opening our hearts to the love of God. And we're not opening ourselves to accepting it, the love of God, or to give the love of God. We are more interested in judgment. I love this, too. That's another thing. I judge everything. I got to work on it. I don't know about you, but I judge everything. And I find that my thinking matter, my thinking activities are so much judgment that the idea that Jesus said, judge not, is very, very, very big for me right this minute, 206 on today. I don't know about others. How do you feel about judgment? Can you live a life where you judge not?
Nah.
It's a biggie. That's a biggie.
Yeah,
that's a big one.
Yeah,
it's a real big one.
It can be done, but it's a discipline. You just I choose not to judge. Yeah.
I you have to catch almost every thought.
Yep.
Yeah, and replace it. I choose not to judge. I choose to love.
Well, I guess you will say that a zillion times a day, and I mean a zillion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it that is a very, very big one. That's a big one. That's a big one. That's
and it's
one.
So important. It's life saving. Yeah.
You see, so we have a lot to do. And as I said, you know, this Bible, man, I'm telling you, it's something because as well as we think we are doing, every chapter just about brings up something and say, oh, no, come on. I thought I was handling this, you know. And now it's something else I got to handle. So it keeps you. So anyway, judgment, just judgment and centering.
Humility is also good.
Right.
Humility.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I don't want to take any more time, but I just wanted to say one thing about man committing suicide. That may have been his salvation, and his path to regeneration. Because maybe he had to kill that part of him, and so not to judge that. Oh, he committed suicide. That's terrible. For him, it may have been the best thing that God wanted him to do, to destroy the way he had been living.
Okay, I mean that's a way of looking at it. Sure, but the thing about it is, no judgment.
Yeah, right.
No judgment.
Yeah.
No judgment.
That you don't know.
That may be very well why we are in one of the reasons why we are incarnated. I won't say definitely is, but it may be one of the reasons why we are incarnated at this time to work through stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So,
it is.
So it's always going to show up. You know, there's always going to be something more to work on, and that's a good thing. You know, so every time we read the Bible, every time we open the book or we get a new idea and it leads you down another, I'll call it a rabbit hole for lack of another word, but not the kind of rabbit hole where you get lost and confused, but where you get clarity, where you're able to release, you know, where judgments come up. And you do have to watch and kind of monitor yourself for a while. But then you get into a rhythm and a pattern that moves you away from that consciousness that was judgmental. It's not; it doesn't happen out of the clear blue. It's because we have a track for it. So you rewire your brain to see life differently, and all of the behaviors change as well. You know, and it begins with staying open and open at the top, open to new ideas, open to new ways of seeing things, you know, and all of that over time becomes a lifestyle. And, it is possible. I don't know if I'm there, but I believe it's possible.
Okay.
Yes.
And you know one thing that I love too, it says that, I'm trying to get the Bible verse kind of right, that no soul will perish. No soul. Every soul will go on and on and on until it perfects itself. So there is no destruction of God's creation, and souls will continue to exist and go to perfection. I guess and I agree with you wholeheartedly about the rewiring. If you do something over and over again, you rewire, and as soon as it becomes like second nature. So let's hope that the judgment thing does that for us. I got to start at square one. Lord have mercy. But anyway, it certainly is possible.
Yeah.
Of course, it's possible. So anyway, it's interesting, man. That's very, very interesting stuff. I didn't think I was going to get into this in Hosea, really and truly. We mentioned at the end of the just a minute ago. I don't know how long they're going to keep us on, but anyway, since we went on late, I guess we're going to have a few more minutes. The abundant life. Jesus came to give us the abundant life. And, of course, we speak about the path of regeneration that we are on. It's personal and intensely personal. But what is this abundant life? And it is abundant life in the Christ. The more time we spend in meditation and the Word and in prayer, the fuller our lives become. Jesus was teaching us about love and these other things that I'm going to list right here. Forgiveness, ego relinquishment, true and false belief systems, mental and physical healing, faith, oneness, humility, mindfulness, the illusion of the past and future, commitment, persistence, affirmative prayer. All of these things are elements of the abundant life, and they, the more we are involved with them, the more abundant our life becomes. We will have everything. We will know everything. We will be able to embrace all those things that are positive and wonderful. And so it will be, the abundant life, and that's what we're after. Okay, so until next week then, we know it's going to get better, and we're going to not judge. We're going to stop the judgment and physical cravings and so forth. We're going to look and see what our inner lacks are and know God can satisfy them. I do not love whiskey. I love God. Christ is my spiritual connection. My soul is satisfied with the love of God, the real stimulus. God, the real stimulus. And until next week, it's going to be better.
Hey.
Better.
Thank you.
Keep on moving. Keep on running. gotta get better.